So we're up to the Mishnah on Yud Beis Amud Beis. The first Mishnah. Just a word of introduction to this Mishnah. We've been discussing cases where someone killed someone b'shogeg and he runs to your miklat. The Mishnah wants to raise the possibility that someone could actually commit murder b'shogeg in the Yer Miklat. So he can't run to the Yer Miklat. He's already in the Yer Miklat. Not only that, he probably can't even run to a different Yer Miklat because, as we've said over and over again, he's not allowed to leave the Yer Miklat. And such a situation is even more common amongst the Levi because a Ben Levi lives in a city which has the status of an Yer Miklat. So what happens if a Ben Levi inadvertently kills someone? Where does he go? And what would be the din if somebody leaves the Yer Miklat, which he's not allowed to do, and he kills someone inadvertently outside the Yer Miklat? Does he run back to the original Yer Miklat? Can he go to a different Yer Miklat? There's a lot of different cases. So let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Harag b'osa ha'ir, a man commits murder b'shogeg in the city itself, meaning in the city of the Yer Miklat, is what's the deal in such a case? So it's not the case that I mentioned before where he ran out of the Yer Miklat and he killed somebody. He's in the Yer Miklat and he kills somebody, b'shogeg. So the Mishnah comes up with a very interesting new idea, and that is golem mishchuna l'shchuna. He can stay within the city, so he's always afforded the protection of that city. He never has to expose himself to the outside of the city. And he fulfills his need or his mitzvah of golus by going from one part of the city to the other part of the city. Mishchuna l'shchuna, within that same city. And the Meiri here says something which I can't really comprehend. Maybe you'll help me with this. The Meiri says in the name of Yesh Omrim that once he goes from one part of the city to the other, Asur lo latzeis mi osa shchuna shegolei leha. In other words, now, initially he had the access to the entire city, Yer Miklat. You know, I imagine this big metropolis, I don't think that's what it was, but so he can go anywhere in the city. Now he's confined to that shchuna where he ran to. Others say, and that's what the Miri quotes, that he will only get protection from the Gol Adam, Yesh Omrim Shu Yochol Leches B'chol Ha'ir, but he will only get protection from the Gol Adam if he doesn't go back to the original Shechuna where he killed. In other words, just like in a sense, we have to make sure that the Rotzeach leaves the domain where he committed the Ritzicha and he has to run to the Yer Miklat. That's in the first round. In the second murder, since he has to move and relocate from one Shechuna to the other Shechuna, we have to make sure that he doesn't find himself in the original Shechuna, because if he's back to the original Shechuna, he hasn't been Mekayim his goals, which is to go to a different Shechuna, and the Gol Adam could then kill him. But, says the Meiri, we don't know what's going to be in the following case. Let's say he kills a second time and the Kohen Gadol dies. Will the death of the Kohen Gadol be mechaper for both his acts of murder, the first and the second? Or is it just one ticket per person and he can't use the same misa of the Kohen Gadol to pater him from golas for both misos?
That's the general question.
Right, a general question. Can the Mises Kohen Gadol be mechaper on two murders? And then he asks another question. He says, what's the deal with the Rotzeach who kills outside of the Yer Miklat? And one possibility is that in such a case, that murder doesn't engender any chiyuv golos whatsoever if he kills outside the Yer Miklat. And the reason for that is because of a certain complicated principle, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, called Kim Levi the Rabbi Mine, which means that if a person does something at a moment in which he could be killed, like for example, the Gemara has the case of a Baba Machteris, where at that moment, Ein Lo Damim, the Torah says he could be killed, and if he breaks Kalim, at that moment, he's not, you know, chayav in compensation for the Kalim. And here also, it could be that since at the moment that he left the Yer Miklat, his Ein Lo Dam, the Gol Adam could kill him, because he no longer has the protection of the Yer Miklat, at that moment, the second Ritzicha could not engender or generate any sort of a punishment, even a Chiyuv Golus. Or should we say no? That if in the case where he killed outside the Yer Miklat, then he's got to go into Golus into a different city. And that's how he's going to be Mekayim his Chiyuv Golus, by going not back to the first city, but going to a second city. Or he says a third possibility is that he can go from one shchuna to the other shchuna in that original city. So these are a number of issues that arise here within the context of a rotzeach who commits a second murder. Then the Mishnah continues, it says, Ben Levi, if a Ben Levi commits murder, and this is even the first murder, golem me'ir le'ir. Now, I looked in the Mefarshim because I thought golem me'ir le'ir means he has to pack out of that city and find himself in a different city. But the Mefarshim, and we'll see this based on a Gemara that's going to come up right away, say that he has two options. He can go from one shchuna to the other shchuna. He's no worse than a rotzeach who can go golus from one shchuna to the other. So if he's living in one shchuna, then he can go to another shchuna. Or he can go to another city entirely. In the case of a rotzeach, he doesn't have the option of going to another city because he can't leave his first city. He only has one option, and that's to go from one shchuna to the other. In the case of the Ben Levi, that's what the Mishnah wants to point out. In addition to the option of goes from one shchuna to the other, he has another option, which the normal rotzeach does not have, and that is to go from one city to another.
The Levi only killed once. The other guy killed twice.
So the Levi was never chayav golus. He happened to be living in a certain city. Does his golus require him, now that he killed Bishogeg, to leave that city? That would be the straightforward reading of the Mishnah. But as we'll soon see in the Gemara, we can't treat him less than we would treat a rotzeach who kills a second time, in which case golus could be fulfilled within the same city by going mishkuna lishkuna, and that kind of a golus applies equally to the case of a Ben Levi. And here I want to share with you an insight of Tosfos. You see Tosfos, Divrei HaMashchil Palcho? So Tosfos suggests the following. Let's say, he says, Koshad Amrinin Kfar Golem Yiplach Leplach. Okay, Yesh Lomad Im Golem Yir Le'ir Yir Rashoi Lelech B'chola Yir. He says, well, the Mishnah is offering him a better option, perhaps, and that is to go from one city where he lives, this Ben Levi, to another city, because then he's allowed to, you know, he has access to the entire city, because that becomes the Yer Miklat for him. Whereas if he chooses to go Mishchuna L'Shchuna and be Mekayim his Golus by picking himself up and relocating within the same city, then he'll be confined until the death of the Kohen Gadol to that Shchuna where he relocated. So in a sense, the Mishnah is giving him, according to Tosfos, a good recommendation, an Eitzah Tova. He probably would be better off in terms of his lifestyle, a free lifestyle, to pick up, pack his bags, and move into a different city. So just to summarize everything we've been saying, there are two options for Golos. One is a city, and one is a shchuna, meaning in the case of a rotzeach, who went into Golos to a city, and that... And now he lives in a certain shchuna. He doesn't have the option in the second murder of relocating to a second city. A Ben Levi has that option, and he might be well advised to take advantage of that option because then he has the access to the whole city. In the case of Rotzeach, he doesn't have the option of leaving his city and going into another Ir Miklat. But he does have a kiyum of golus, but it's going to straitjacket him, and that's packing himself up and from his local shchuna, relocating in a different shchuna in the Ir Miklat, and then he can't leave that shchuna because that becomes his kiyum of golus.
Would that mean that if he moved back to if he set foot in his old neighborhood,
then the second goal of Dom could kill him?
But not the first.
Not the first. Once he gets back, right? Well, actually, he stayed within the city, so the whole city gives him klita against the first goal of Dom. Right, so that's, yeah. Now, as long as he doesn't leave the confines of the city, I mean, that's obvious. In other words, the second goal of Dom doesn't in any way undermine the first goal of Dom. You know, that remains stagnant or stationary, whatever. So again, the Mishnah establishes that there's a kiyum of golus in going from one shchuna to the other. The Mishnah establishes that the ear miklot is koletes. I'm sorry, the ear levim is koletes, like any other ear miklot. And now the Gemara wants to analyze where this comes from. Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa wants to analyze a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. What does it say in Parshas Mishpatim? I'm going to read the entire pasuk to you. You'll see it here, the Torah R. It says, Vasher lo tzada, if he didn't deliberately kill someone. Velakim ino liyado, but God set this up. Vesamti lecha makom. Asher yonus shoma. Now this is a very interesting drush in the Braisa, because who is the Ribbono Shel Olam talking to? Who is he addressing when he gives the Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu, correct? So it's very interesting that Vesamti lecha makom. We always see Moshe as just the conduit to bring the Torah to Klal Yisrael, but here the drush is going to take lecha very, very literally, strictly, and it's a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Rice of Vesamti lecha bichayecha, which means that in this pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu found out that he was going to set up three Arei Miklot. And the pasuk later on in Sefer Dvarim is going to tell us that actually Moshe did do that, he implemented this. But the nevuah, so to speak, the prophecy, was given to Moshe already in this pasuk, for Samti Lecha Makom, that you yourself will set up an Ir Miklot. But then it says Lecha Makom, and Rashi says that it didn't have to say the word Lecha, Lecha Makom, Bimkom Cha. Your girsa is probably Mimkom Cha. I also have that girsa, Mimkom Cha. But the Bach changes it to Bimkom Cha. Now what does that mean? That this Ir Miklot is going to be Bimkom Cha in your place, Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu, for the 40 years in the Midbar, lived in what's called the Machna Levia. The Machna Levia was the Machna of Shechina, and that's where Moshe was located, as were other members of Shevet Levi and the Kohanim. But in this case, what the Torah is telling Moshe Rabbeinu is that in your area, in your location, there will be a klita of Ratzchim. Because the status of your location, of Machna Leviyah, is the same as Arei Leviyin. Then the Braisa says, what does it mean, Asher Yonos Shama? Milame, this teaches us Shahayu Yisrael Maglim Bamidbar, that the din of Golus applied even in the Midbar. In Lehechan Maglim, so where was the Ir Miklot in the Midbar? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu set up three Ir Miklot, but that was in Eivra Yarden, not in the desert, not in Sinai, right? So the Braisa answers Lamachna Leviya, that the Rotzeach could run to the Machna Leviya, and there he would find Klita, he would be protected from the Gol Adam. So the entire process of Ir Miklot was effective even before the assignment and designation of the Ir Miklot in Eretz Yisrael, and that applied for 40 years in the Midbar. But where? In the Machna Leviya.
What happened for those 14 years then? That, you know, if the Ir Miklot was collected during the 40 years of the desert,
right,
and after the conquest, remember we said that the three set up in the Yardi were not effective, or whatever it was, effective in 2 years.
As Klita.
So you set up the other three. So what happened during that 14-year period?
That's a good question. That's not our sugi, but that's a good question in general, you know. Al Mishkavi Balelos.
Okay.
So now the Gemara adds a comment to this Raisa. Mikan Amru, based on this concept of Vesamti Lecha Makom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that the Machna Leviya has the power of Klita, Mikan Amru, Ben Levi Shaharag Gole Mipelach, or Pelech Lepelech. And Pelech Lepelech means from one city to another city. Meaning, where will he find Klita? In another city of Levin. V'im Gola Lepilcho, which means if he goes into Golos within his own city, but from one Shechuna to another city, Pilcho Kolto, he has the Klita of that Pilcha. In other words, he can be gola from one shkuna to another shkuna, but he cannot leave the new shkuna. That's where he's confined in order to protect himself from the gola da. Om Rav Acha Breid Rav Ika Maikra. What is the source for this halacha of Pelach, that the Pelach is kolate? It says in the Pasuk, this is already at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Ki be'ir miklato yeshev. And apparently, it didn't have to say these words, Ki be'ir miklato yeshev. It could have been enough to say, Ki sham yeshev. What's the extra emphasis here on ir miklato? Ir shekoltoso kvar. Even though the city was already kolate him, nevertheless, he could still find klita and protection against the Goldam within that same city when he moves and relocates from one shchuna to the other. Now the next two words are very problematic. Do you have the words kayotzebo? That's the next two words?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're not sure what the Mishnah means by kayotzebo. The Ritva initially says that we should erase the words kayotzebo, but then he finds some sort of justification for the words of kayotzebo. And he says the following. What do we see in our Mishnah, and then kayotzebo will extrapolate and compare it to something else. We see that a Ben Levi has to be gola even though he's already living in an ir miklat. And for that matter, a rotzeach has to be gola even though he's living in an ir miklat. So why is that so? Meaning, if the ir miklat has the power to be kolate, why does he have to be gola? So the Ritva answers, listen carefully, shal yidei goluso, by relocating, yichana yoser. He quotes this, he refers to this concept of knia. Knia means to humble oneself. In other words, I'm a big shot of my own Dalai Lama. You know, everybody notices me and everybody knows me and I'm a major, you know, member of the community. But if I relocate to another community, that's what they say about the Vilna Gaon, that for a while he, in Yiddish we say pravid golus, meaning he left Vilna in order to achieve a certain level of knia. And there were other gedolim who did the same. So kayotzeba says, since the concept of golus implies a certain knia of a certain humility, is therefore rotzeach shegolir miklato. If let's say the rotzeach moves in, you know, he buys a house, we'll see about that in a minute, and whether you have to buy a house or rent a house or what, but he moves into the miklat, and guess what? The people don't even know that he's a rotzeach. They think he likes, you know, remember we described back in Yud Aleph all the great things about the city, the population and the water supply, and everything's wonderful, and he certainly wants to be in close contact with the Levium. So he decides to live in the city. And people want to give him a great covet. You know, he kind of moves into the city. You know, they sing for him, they dance for him, they want to give him shlishi. But they have no idea that he's a rotzeach. Is the mission requires, and it's going to be derived from a pasuk, Yomar Lehem, he has to notify them, don't give me covet, rotzeach ani. I mean, that's also part, says the Ritva, of his experience of humility.
According to that, the kayotzeba would also work in the opposite direction. In other words, until now we have an understanding that moving from different neighborhoods is an absolute requirement.
Right.
And if you don't do this, the goal is don't even kill you. The second goal is
that. Right.
But I don't think anyone's going to say that if Rotzeach accepts Shlishi and doesn't say I'm not a Rotzeach, that just during the Aliyah the goal is don't even kill him. In other words,
no.
Could you understand the moving from neighborhood to neighborhood as an obligation, but not
right.
as a strict obligation?
Right, no. The Torah says, ir miklato. Ir miklato teaches me that his ir miklat now is the shchuna that he goes into. You know, that's a din in ir miklat that the Torah requires. Here we're talking about some sort of extra element of kapara for his sin. You know, that's not, this is not dinim in klita. Amrulo afal pichen. Supposing he notifies the people of the city that he's a rotzeach, and they say, you know what, despite it all, we want to give you shlishi, as we said before. Is then yikabel mihem? In other words, he's already fulfilled his obligation. He's already notified them, he's not fooling them that he's a rotzeach, that's what he's doing there. Beyond that, if they choose voluntarily on their own, knowing all the facts on the ground, that they want to give him a kavod, that's okay. He's allowed to accept the kavod. Shenemar, v'zeh dvar harotzeach. Dvar harotzeach means, according to this drasha, I would call this an asmach, I don't know if it's a full-fledged drasha, but it means dvar harotzeach. The rotzeach has to be speaking. He has to give a message. He has to tell them that he's a rotzeach. Okay, and now I think we can turn to Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Yeah, no, I was just giving an example. I don't see in the Mefarshim. Maybe you have something about what covered. I just mentioned Shlishi. You know, amongst the Litvak, Shishi is considered even more chashim. So benching, you're benching. Well, I'm chavid, you're benching. You know, a new guy moves to town. You know, you think, well, he probably just got married. He's a newlywed. You know, lives in Dallas, and now he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He moves into one of the areas. Why you would choose the Miklat? Yeah, I tried to. Okay. Now, what about rent? Okay. Does the Rotseach have to pay rent? And to whom would he pay rent? Because the city is owned by the Levium, correct? Right, we have 48 cities of the Levium. Six are dedicated as Ari Miklat. So the Rotzech is living on the turf of the Levium. So on this, we're going to have machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir Tutanoyim. We'll start with the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says all is fair, and Malim Hayu Schar La Levium. They have to pay rent to the Levium. You know, the Levium own the city. Let the Rotzchim pay rent to the Levim as long as they're in Golos. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer, lo hayu malim lehem schar. They could live in those houses rent free. That makes it even more attractive to live in the Yer Miklat. I don't know if that would apply to someone who didn't commit murder and decides to live in the Yer Miklat. You know, that's a regular business relationship. Rabbi Meir is going to derive a special halacha for the Rotzchim. Okay. If you don't mind, Rabbi Osa, I'm just going to close this door because I can't hear myself think.
I'm coming through.
Okay. Okay, so hang in there, Rabbi, because we're going to get to Rabbi Meir in just a minute. Okay? We're going to see now another machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and I'm not sure if the second machlokas has anything whatsoever to do with the first. But the second machlokas is absolutely fascinating. The Kohen Gadol dies, and now the Rotzeach goes free, and he comes back, let's say, to hometown. Right? There's no place like home. He had a big job, which of course he forfeited when he went to the Yer Miklat. And now Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are going to debate whether or not he's reinstated to his original job, which means he has claims and he has rights to that job. Now, in Halacha, this is a very serious business. There are full simonim in Shulchan Aruch, in the Choshen Mishpat, about the laws of Srara. Srara means when I have a position, I've been signed up, and I'm getting a salary, I'm getting covered, I have power, and so forth and so on. What happens now to the Rotzeach when he goes back to his original city? Guess what? Says Rabbi Meir, Chozer l'Srara Shehayaba. Whatever Srara he had before, and the Rishonim give examples, he was the Nasi, he was the Rosh Bezdin, those are various examples of Srara. There may be even lesser examples of Srara. You know, he was in charge of the water carriers. He had a position as the supervising officer, you know, amongst the hard hats. Is Choser, he goes back, with Srara Shehayaba. That's Rabbi Meir. It's interesting that in both cases, Rabbi Meir is sort of tipping the scale in favor of the Rotzeach. The first case was that he alleviates the Rotzeach from paying rent. In the second case, he's allowing the Rotzeach, after the death of the Kohen Gadol, to be reinstated as the Nasi or the Rosh Bezdin. Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo hayachozer l'sror shahayava. He doesn't have rights to go back to that original Srara. Again, if he's appointed, that's a different story. But the claim of Srara, which by the way, the claim of Srara is something that even lends itself to Yerusha after you die. You know, you could bequeath it to your children.
Looks like you're not passing it really.
Again, we're going to get to the sugya. I'm just reading the Mishnah. You know, this is going to be a very, very profound sugya in the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So I don't know how we paskin yet because I didn't get to the sugya. Okay. Omar Rav Kahana says, what is going on here in the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda? And first we'll take the first machlokas. Whether or not the Rotzeach has to pay rent to the Levim. Says Rav Kahana, the entire machlokas refers to Sheish. Sheish means the six Arim Miklot, about which the Torah says, V'hayu lachem ha'arim le'miklot, that these cities are given to them, meaning to the Rotzchem. And the question is, how do we define the word lachem? Now, I'm just going to, if you don't mind, just to clarify, just to help my mind, I'm going to skip and fast forward. Aval, but with regard to Arboim Vishtayim, with regard to the 42 cities, Divrei HaKol Hayumalim Lem Schar. It means that even according to Rabbi Meir, who, as we saw earlier in the Mishnah, would alleviate the Rotzchim for paying rent, that doesn't apply in the case of the 42 Arei Levim. The issue here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is limited to the six Arei Miklat, and the question is, who really is the Balabas in those six? Even though they have the status of Arei Halavim, but at the same time the Torah says Lachem, and we're going to see how to dash in the word Lachem in two different ways. But, says Rav Kahana, you should know up front that no one, not even Rav Meir, is going to alleviate and give a rent-free situation to Rotzeach unless he is the Balabas. In the case of the six Arei Miklat, according to Shitas Rav Meir, but in the case of the 42, these are Arei Levim. And true, they also have an additional dimension, the power of Klita, but they are Ari Levim, and therefore even Rav Meir agrees that you have to pay Schar. So what is the case that they argue about? The six Ari Miklot, where the Torah says, V'ayu lachem ha'arim le'miklot. And here we start with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Mar Savar, Rabbi Yehuda holds, lachem, what does it mean, lachem? Leklita, this ownership, so to speak, or these rights that you have, lachem, the Rotzkim have to the city, these six cities, is leklita. That's all the Torah means. We don't go beyond. In other words, we're not going to say that therefore the rights and the ownership and the financial ownership of the Levium is completely undermined by the word lachem. Lachem, the next word in the pasuk, is lemiklat. Lachem lemiklat and only lemiklat. So you have definite rights, and no one can preclude your rights to run to the Ir Miklat and be protected therein. But that's all the word lachem is, because the Torah went out of its way to say lachem lemiklat. The word lemiklat basically cuts down the word lachem and qualifies it. But Marsov, or Rameir, holds lachem is lachol tzarchechem, meaning that we're going to give you rights to live there. You have an obligation to run to the Ir Miklat. That's the only place you could achieve kapar of golus. That's the only place where you can get protection. But not only that, you have all the rights through klita to the city itself. So basically, we could say the following: that the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir is, what does the Torah mean if the Torah gives the rotzeach one dimension of bailus, of ownership? No one could preclude him from his rights to live in the city and be protected therein. Does that go beyond? Do we view klita as a din mamon, as some sort of monetary ownership of the city, and therefore you alleviate him of paying rent? And we'll see the Rishonim, we're going to talk about paying taxes and arnona and all the rest. Or do we say no? Lachem is not aloch in dini mamonis. Lachem is aloch in klita. It's aloch that belongs to the Yeridea, to ritual law in terms of protection of the Rotzeach and the Golus and the Kapar that he gets therein. But the city remains in the ownership financially of whom? Of the Levium. And therefore, let him pay rent. And here, Rava takes opposition. Says Rava to Rav Kahana, Ha Vadai, everybody agrees that Lachem means Lachem L'chol Tzarchechem Mashma. In other words, with regard to the six Arei Miklat, with regard to the six Ari Miklat, even Rabbi Yehuda accepts Rabbi Meir Shita, they don't have to pay. Lachem means they're yours. These cities are given to you. What's the machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? Just the opposite. The machlokus as to whether the Rotsim have to pay schar is the case of Biarboim Ushtayim, the 42 cities of Leviim about which the Torah says, and this is at the end of Sefer Dvarim, V'eis ha'orim asher titnu la'leviim, eis sheish ori ha'miklat asher titnu lanu shama rotzeach, v'aleihem, on top of them, titnu arboim ushtayim ir. It's very interesting that when the Torah designates the cities for the Leviim, it starts with the Ari Miklat. And then it says, V'aleihem, and in addition to the Ari Miklat, will give you 42 cities. There seems to be some sort of a comparison here. That's what Rabbi Yehuda's point is, between the 6 and the 42, meaning the 42 are an extension of the 6. There's an equation or analogy between the 6 and the 42. And just like in the case of the 6, the Torah says, Lachem, which means L'chol Tzorcheichem, is Mar Sov Rabbi Yehuda holds Aleihem Titnu Arboim Mishtayim Ir, meaning Ki Hanach, add the 42 to the 6. And what does it mean? So here we have a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. How far do we take this analogy or this equation between the 6 and the other additional 42? Personally, I like Rabbi Meir better. Rabbi Meir says the analogy is total, it's complete. And the Torah is saying that whatever rights the Rotzchim have to the 6, they have the same identical rights to the balance of the 48, meaning the 42, and they don't pay schar. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and he says, no. Aleihem titnu? What does it mean, aleihem titnu? It's only referring to Klita. In other words, the additional 42 cities expand the, shall we say, the ability of the Rotzech to find Klita. There are 6, and there are another 42. Again, you remember that we discussed the fundamental difference between them. The 6, even Shalom Midas, if he happens to roll into an Ir Miklat, he's protected. In the case of the 42, he has to be deliberate and know that he's going there for Klita. But nevertheless, the Aleihem Titnu, the expansion, is only with regard to Klita. But we shouldn't learn from this equation that it's L'chol Tzarchechem. L'chol Tzarchechem is unique to the Ari Miklat, but doesn't apply to the remaining 42. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Umar Savar, what does Rabbi Meir hold? Aleihem Titnu means Ki Hanach. It's an absolute equation. The 42, as far as the Rotzchim are concerned, have the same identical status as the 6. Ma Hanach, just like these 6. Is L'chol Tzorcheichem. It means you live there without paying. Af Hani Nami, so too the 42, L'chol Tzorcheichem, and they don't have to pay. Aval b'sheish, with regard to the 6, and here Rava is taking, you know, is crossing swords with Rabbi Rav Kahana, is Divrei HaKol, everybody agrees, lo hayu milim lahem schar, is lachem is l'chol tzorcheichem, and there's no payment of rent. So let's just summarize. According to Rav Kahana, the machlokas is with regard to the 6. With regard to the 42, those are purely 100% owned by the Leviim, and they have to pay schar. Even the Rotzim have to pay schar. With regard to the 6, there's a machlokas how to interpret the word lachem. Is it lachem leklita or is it lachem lechol tzorcheichem? According to Rava, just the opposite is true. With regard to the 6, everybody agrees they don't have to pay rent because lachem lechol tzorcheichem. The machlokas is how do we understand the 42 when the Torah says aleihem titnu? Is the aleihem titnu only with regard to klita? But these cities are clearly owned by the Leviim, and therefore the Rotzim have to pay rent to the Leviim, or no, the Aleihem Titnu is a complete, total comparison, and in the context of that hekesh, of that equation, and this is the sheet of Rabbi Meir, just like L'chol Tzorcheichem applies to the 6, it applies to the other 42. And here I want to share with you, but for this I have to sit down, because my back is beginning to hurt me. Okay, here I want to share with you a note that I saw. I hope I'll find it. Of course, I usually circle my notes so I know which ones I want to talk to you about, but this time I didn't do that. Just one second. Oh, I think this is it. He quotes the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes has a kasha. His kasha is addressed to Rabbi Yehuda, right? Rabbi Yehuda says that they have to pay rent. And again, whether it's true for the 6 or only for the 42, that's going to be Machlokas Rav Kahana and Rava. But in any event, Ech Shaloyi, as we say, Rabbi Yehuda says that they have to pay rent. So the Sfas Emes is bothered. I don't know if this kasha bothers me, but it bothers him. He says, "Im kein, if they could charge the rotzeach, the rotzim rent, is yachol lahalos b'schirosam kechol sheyichvitzu kechol chevitz libam." In other words, the Sfas Emes finds it intolerable to have this open-ended situation where the balabayis could charge rent to the rotzim. Because the rotzeach desperately needs a place to rent, and what you know, if there could be a collusion, a cartel agreement here amongst all. I'm just embellishing it amongst all the levium in that city, and we're going to charge. The sky's the limit. So therefore, he reinterprets this halacha of paying rent. He says the following: that what happens is when the city of refuge is designated, then the cities around the Ir Miklot will pay the Levium the amount of money it costs to build homes for the Rotzchim in the Ir Miklot. I'm not exactly sure what he means. I guess he means that if you divide up the map of Eretz Yisrael into 6 parts for the 6 cities, I mean, including Evra Yarden, so then all the cities in each one of those districts will raise a certain tax. That money will be given, if I understand correctly, this Sfas Emes, over to the Levium who live in that Ir Miklot. They will use those funds to build the cities, and the Rotzchim will, according to Rabbi Yehuda, will pay whatever it costs to build that building, that home that they're going to live in. So Rotzeach X, we'll call him Yankel, lives in a certain house, and the Levium actually build the house, and they lay out the money, but the money is reimbursed by the cities around, and now the maximum cost that the Rotzeach is going to be penalized with, or whatever the word is, or is going to have to pay, is the cost for that house. Then he says, but if you look at Tosfos Divrei HaMashkil Malim, which is on the top of your Gimel, Pirish Rotzchim Aboyim V'Dorim Shom Tzrichim Lahalos Mas V'Arnuna LaLevim, they have to pay a tax for living, for the living quarters, and in Arnon, I guess you call it municipal taxes, to the Levium. To Lotema, we're not going to say Xeris HaMelech HaLevium La'akiv Osam Be'iram. It's not some sort of Xeris HaKosva. The Levium have to be, so to speak, penalized by guaranteeing homes and living quarters for the Rotzchim. They have to be paid for that. So the impression you get from Tosfos is that the Rotzchim would pay the Levium for living in the city. They're not paying for the houses that were built for them. And the Aruch Haner adds to this Tosfos, Haya poshet letos shel kuli alma hayu mishalmim schar dira. He says that what Tosfos means is there was never an issue between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about the obligation of the Rotzchim to pay schar dira, meaning Tosfos doesn't understand that the Rotzech is a homeowner. He thinks that the Levium are homeowners, so they spent the money to build this. So Tosfos says, what is some sort of Xeris HaKosav that they have to house, they have to host the Rotzchim in their own homes and not get paid for that, not get reimbursed for that? No, says Tosfos. What we're going to do is, according to that shita of Rabbi Meir, is going to alleviate the rotzeach from paying taxes. But as far as the base, this is the way the Aruch HaNer interprets Tosfos, that as far as the basic rental fees are concerned, that they have to pay. So it comes out that the way the Aruch HaNer understands Tosfos, the Tosfos was not impressed by the question of the Sfasemis. You know, the question, Sfasemis was bothered, there's no cap here beyond which you can't pay, charge rent. And it's an open-ended thing. Tosfos is not bothered by that. Says the Aruch HaNer, according to Tosfos, they will pay rent. And not only that, even Reb Meir agrees that they pay rent. The only argument is about other taxes and other municipal arnonas. Do they have to pay or do they not have to pay? So that's what I found here in this note.
The reason I had asked originally, we usually don't talk to Rabbi Meir when Rabbi Meir's name is mentioned in the argument of Rabbi Yehuda, and also because of the number by the Rambam, but that's secondly, the combination of two. Tosfos makes a lot of sense.
That we pass like Rabbi Yehuda.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Very good. If it works out, that's good. I'm not sure it's going to work out in the next one. Let's check it out. So again, we have another machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about what happens to the rotzeach when he returns to his hometown after the misa, the death of the Kohen Gadol. And if you recall, we have Rabbi Meir again voting, you know, what's the word, throwing his lot with the rotzchim, and they get reinstated, and Rabbi Yehuda says no. So the Gemara says the following, Chozel Israr Shahayuba, according to Rabbi Meir, and the Braisa is going to give us an insight into what the depth of this machlokas, the root of this machlokas. So in order to understand this Braisa, we have to understand that all of a sudden, to our surprise, the Braisa makes a shift and addresses a totally different case, and that's the case of an Eved Ivri. The Eved Ivri, let's say, if you want to say he stole something, he was guilty of thievery, and he was of theft, and he was sold as an Eved Ivri, and now he goes free at the end of 6 years. And the question is, at the end of 6 years, does he have rights to be reinstated in whatever position he had before? And the Pasuk says, with regard to Eved Ivri, at the end of Sefer Vayikra, B'chukosai, whether it's a case of Sheish or a case of Yovel, it says, V'shav el mishpachto v'el achuzas avosav yoshuv. So what does this mean, that he goes back to his mishpacha? And the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda is the following. L'mishpachto hu shav. Let him, you know, let him go back to his family. But v'eino shav l'masha hichziku avosav. What does this mean? It means financially, he has rights to the achuza of his ancestors, but he doesn't have rights to the srara of his ancestors. That srara, which as we said before, if you recall, is bequeathed through the law of Yerusha, and all the laws of Yerusha kick in with regard to srara, which by the way, if you're ever interested, there are articles written about Rabbanim who took positions and they claim that their son, whichever son, again, let's say the Bechor, has rights to get that position of Rabbanus when the Rav retires. And this is not standard practice, although I've seen it done. And there are issues about whether or not Srara applies to Rabbanus. But if it does, then you can bequeath it to your children. And this is a very profound issue. And the question is, Rabbi Yehuda says, L'mishpachto ushav. Yeah, give him the achuza. He can be, you know, they'll embrace him into the family. But they have no rights to machshich ziku avosav. And as the srara that was in the chazaka here means you own it, you possess it, and you bequeath it to your children after you're dead, is after he goes out lecheres, he doesn't get that srara. Even though his father has the srara and his grandfather had the srara, he's out. This reminds me, just by sheer association, of a sugya in Masechta Brachos about a kohen who killed a nefesh, and whether or not he could ever be reinstated as a Kohen to Duchen if he does tshuva. You know, certain situations are irreversible. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, as far as Hilchas Srara is concerned, the Rotzeach B'Shogeg forfeits his Srara. He has no rights to claim that Srara. Hopefully he has some other brothers who will claim the Sroah when his father dies. Anyway, Reb Meir Omer, Af hu shav lebashech ziku avosav. Because look at the end of the pasuk, says Reb Meir. Let me call your attention to the words, V'el achuzas avosav yashuv. Don't think that achuzas avosav is limited to the monetary possessions of the father. Those are divided in Yerusha, and he, the Rotzeach, will get his portion. No. Achuzas avosav is a much more all-inclusive term that goes beyond physical possessions of karka, metaltalin, and monies, etc. But it refers even to srara. In other words, the machlokas here between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda is, what? How do we define srara? Is srara some sort of extraneous rights, zchus srara, that can be transferred over to my children, or no? Srara is much more than that. Srara is actually like ownership. It's like a tangible object that can be bequeathed and will be bequeathed through the parsha of Yerusha. And here I want to call to your attention the Ritva. The Ritva says that in our Mishnah, one issue was addressed, and in this Braisa that we're studying now, a different issue is being addressed. In other words, there's a chiddush in the Braisa that we don't see in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, he says, is talking about a current srara, meaning this is a srara which the Rotzeach possessed before he did what he did, before he murdered someone. And the question is, can he go back to his srara? The Braisa, on the other hand, says the Ritva, is judging a different question, and that is the laws of Yerushin srara. This was not a srara that the Rotzeach once possessed. He never possessed it. He wants to possess it now through the parsha of Yerusha. And it's fundamentally different. Says the Ritva, that when we take the Mishnah and the Braisa in conjunction, and we collapse them and unify them into one din, the Mishnah is telling you a chiddush in Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda says that even the srara that he himself, the Rotzeach, owned is completely forfeited and never to be returned to him. And the Braisa is telling me a chiddush in Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says that he can be reinstated totally, and he has rights to his srara, even if he never owned the srara. It was never his. So again, what the Ritva is doing is, he's saying on the one hand, there's a chiddush in the Mishnah that I don't have in the Braisa, and vice versa, but at the end of the day, it's one identical machlokas. The chiddush of that Mishnah is to teach us that even though he wants to be reinstated to his own srara, Rabbi Yehuda nevertheless says that lo ayachozer l'srara shahayavah. The chiddush of the Braisa is, even though he wants to now step into the laws of Yerusha and have rights to inherit his father's srara, Rabbi Meir holds that in this case he never owned the srara, and therefore he doesn't have rights to the srara. How much more so would Rabbi Meir say that we can undermine him from a... Did I get that right? Let me just say that again, one more time. Again, the chiddush of the Mishnah is in Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that he doesn't have his srara even though he once had it. The chiddush of the Braisa is in Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is telling us that he gets all the rights to srara, even new rights to srara, which he never had before. Meaning, he gets this theoretical conceptual zchus that in event, or when the day comes and his father dies, that he will inherit the srara of his father, says Rabbi Meir, even to that extent he's reinstated. How much more so with the Kal V'chomer will he repossess the srara, that he had before. So again, I think it's a beautiful presentation, very profound of the Ritva. And that is that the Braisa and the Mishnah sort of are two halves of a whole. They complement each other. Okay, now the Braisa continues and analyzes the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir with regard to the Rotzeach situation. Because keep in mind that everything we've discussed so far technically applies only to an Eved Ivri. The pasuk that we've been darshaning, v'shavel mishpachto, we had questions how, to what extent does he go back to his mishpacha, was addressing the case of an Eved Ivri. And now the Braisa says, v'chein be Golem, meaning, and the same thing applies to Rotzeh, who goes to the Eir Miklat after the Kohen Gadol dies. We have the identical machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, whether he goes back to his Svara. And basically, each Shita is entrenched in its opinion and extends it by equation from Eved Ivri all the way to Rotzeach. So let's go through it now. Here's the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? In the case of Eved Ivri, it says Vishavel Mishpachta Belachuzas Avosav Yashuv Kishu Omer Yashuv. This last word in the pasuk Yashuv is completely superfluous. We don't need it to cross it out without any loss to the meaning of the pasuk. It would have been sufficient to say Vishav El Mishpachta Belachuzas Avosav. Why did it have to add the word Yashuv? And here we have the opinion, L'rabos es harotzeach, that this gives the rotzeach the same identical din as the Eved Ivri. So for example, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds Enos Shav Misraros in the case of Eved Ivri, he's going to apply the same rule to the rotzeach. According to Rabbi Meir, who says Shav Elachuzos Vel Srara, the same din of Eved Ivri applies to the rotzeach. It's very interesting to me because I would have made a fundamental distinction between Eved Ivri and Rotzeach. You know, the Eved Ivri is not guilty of murder. You know, again, I'm not justifying what he did, but it's on a much lower case, and therefore Rabbi Meir makes a lot of sense in the case of Eved Ivri that he can be chozer to his srara, and even a srara that he didn't possess, but Rabbi Meir says he will inherit the Srara of his father. But I'm not sure that, you know, that Rabbi Meir should, you know, and the logic of Rabbi Meir should apply even in the case of a Rotzeach. But on the other hand, if you look at it the flip side, the Rotzeach was only a shogeg, whereas the Eved Ivri was amazed. So I mean, you could really turn it in different directions. But the bottom line is that Yoshev Rotzeach means L'rabos es, Yoshev is L'rabos es Rotzeach. Now the Gemara analyzes this price. My, what do you mean by v'chein begola? In other words, how are you learning from the word Yashiv that the same halach that the Torah formulates with regard to Eved Ivri should be extended by equation to the Rotzeach? So the Gemara explains, Kidasanya, we learned in a brisa with regard to the Rotzeach, who goes to the Eir Miklat, the Torah says, and I'll read the whole pasuk to you. Ki ve'ir miklato yeshev admos ha-kohen ha-gadol, v'achre mos ha-kohen gadol yashuv ha-rotzeach al eretz achuzoso. Emphasize the word yashuv. And it says here within the context of the Rotzeach that after the death of the Kohen Gadol, Yashuv El Eretz Achuzoso comes along, Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, Le Eretz Achuzoso Hu Shav. Yeah, he can go back to his family. The Eino Shav L'mashech Ziku Avosov, even for a Sror that he himself personally owned. He was the Nasi, he was Abbez, and he has no rights to reclaim that Srora. And how much more so he doesn't have rights to reclaim the Srara from his Avosav, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Omer, Afhu Shav, L'mashech Ziku, Avosav. And the Rotzeach, according to Rabbi Meir, can possess even future Srara. Slowly by that he repossesses his own Srara, but he even possesses, he has rights to possess the future Sraras, which are going to come into being when his father dies. And how does Rabbi Yehuda know what he knows? Has Rabbi Meir know what he knows? Gomar Shiva Shiva Mehasam. Just like in Eved Ivri it says, El Achuzas Avosav Yashuv. In Rotzeach also it says, Yashuv HaRotzeach El Eretz Achuzas. It's not coincidental that in both cases the word that's used by the Torah is Yashuv, and in both cases it's El Achuzaso. Is there from you that says that the Rotzeach doesn't go back and reclaim his Svara, just like the Eved Ivri cannot reclaim his Svara? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, v'shav el mishpachto means l'mishpachto v'shav el lobusoraso. And Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, says that just like the Eved Ivri has a right to reclaim his Svara, and he learns mishpachto vel achuzas avosov includes even Svara, so too in the case of Rotzeach, where it also says Shiva, it says Yashuv, he can reclaim his throne. Hadron Eilecha, Elu Hein HaGol. Okay. Now the next perek is what I would call Masechta Makis. Because in the first two prakim, we had some fascinating discussions about Edom Zomim and about Chiv Golus, but there was nothing about Malkus. And this is Masechta Makis. So let's see if the baby can live up to its reputation, to its name. And the Mishnah now is going to list the various averas for which you chayv Malkus. I mean, keep in mind that there are many cases where you violate an aver and you're not chayv Malkus. But basically the rule is whenever the Torah says lo, hishomer, pen, al, all those lashonos, any of the above, you get Malkus. And in fact, there are 39 cases of lavin where you get Malkus. But there are five categories of lavin where you don't get Malkus. A lav anitan lazoros misus bezdin, a lav shenitan litashlumin, a lav shenbo maisa, a lav anita kleesei, and a lav shebichlol. So the entire perek is dedicated to understanding these five exceptions to the rule, cases where although he violated a lav and an azara in Torah, nevertheless he doesn't get Malkus. But Elu Hein Alokin, the Mishnah is going to list cases where you do get Malkus. Not the exceptions to the rule, but those cases that fit into the rule. Of course, you have to add that there were Edom and Asra. If there were no Edom and Asra, then there's no Malkus. You have to also ask yourself the question, is it true that this Mishnah is exhaustive? Rashi says, Elu ein alokin, elu lav dafka, the tana v'shir lokin tuva. There are many cases that are left out of this Mishnah. The Mishnah actually only lists 39, no, I don't know how many cases, less than 39. I don't know the exact number. But anyway, the Rambam says in 207 lavin, 207, you get Malkus. And if you're ever interested in reading the list that the Rambam enumerates, you can open up to Perek Yutes Mil Sanhedrin. It's probably the longest Perek in the Rambam. He has all 207 cases where you chayav Malkus. He used the word Zar as a simon. Zar is Zion Reish, which is 207. Now, out of these 207, 21 of them have a chiv kares without Mises Bezdin, because again, if it has Mises Bezdin, then there's no Malkus, that's called a lav anitan lasaris Mises Bezdin. 18 of them in karachiv Misa Bidei Shamayim. Okay, kares is much more severe than Misa Bidei Shamayim, because kares is a punishment that's meted out not only to the sin of the criminal, but also to his children. Misa Bidei Shamayim is only him. And 168 of those 207 are regular classical chiyuvei lavim that have neither kares nor mises bezin. But the general rule is that if the severe punishment is bidei shamayim, but with edim and asra, they will not get obviously the bidei shamayim, the heavenly punishment. That's they will get the punishment down here on earth of malchus. But with regard to the other cases, there is no malchus because there's kares. Excuse me, because there's Misas, Bezdin, because there's a human punishment that's more severe than Malkus. Good. Now, why does the Mishnah choose to list these cases and not give us an exhaustive list? So Rashi explains, Lashma Inon, you see the third line in Rashi, Diesh Malkus Bechaive Krisus. You know, lest you think mistakenly that since there's a higher and more severe punishment, namely kares, therefore the lav doesn't belong to the membership club of Malkus. The Mishnah wants to tell you that this Malkus for chayvei krisus. Again, if there was edim and asra. Rashi is going to tell me that there's a chiddush in the case of almana and grusha, that you get two sets of Malkus if the same woman is both an almana from her first husband and a grusha from her second husband. A kohen marries this woman, he'll get 39 times two Malkus because these are two separate lavim in the Torah, even though they converge and overlap in one act of marriage with this woman. And then Rashi says there's a separate chiddush in the case of tevel u'masarishin shlo nitla trumas or hegdesh lo nifta, because in these cases the Torah doesn't explicitly mention the lav that derived from various drushas. You might think that they would be alleviated from malchus. Maaser sheni is mentioned agav hegdesh. So to make a long story short, every case that's listed here in the Mishnah has its own chiddush. The Mishnah is not giving you an exhaustive list of all the cases, 207 lavim, which generate a chiyuv malchus. And frankly speaking, I'm confused here because the last part of the Mishnah mentions mentions Nevela and Trefa and Shkotzim Vermasim. So Rashi doesn't reveal the secret as to what the Chiddush is. I mean, Nevela is a classical lav, there's no kares, and there are no two lavim over here. So why did the Mishnah feel compelled to mention someone who eats Nevela, Trefa, Shkotzim, Vermasim? Rashi somehow skips that. I don't know what the Chiddush is in that case. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. B'li Neder, next time, which I guess will be during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, we'll go through the Mishnah carefully, case by case, with the Rashis. There'll Tilei Tilim Shel Chidushim here. And then B'li Neder will start. We'll start the Gemara. Okay, then? Gemara Chatima Tova, everyone should have a Shana Tova. We should all be written in the Sifrei Chaim, the Sifrei Tzadikim, Lialto, Lechaim, Lesholem.